I'm super curious. Are we going to roll into a new set of exclusivity contracts? Are the pro tours at that point going to just be like, okay, this whole guaranteed money thing is for the birds? I just have to think that the salaries that these players are being paid right now are not commensurate with the amount of money that they would be earning if we just had no contracts and it was just all 100% prize money based events. This is the moment we waited for. Everything you want is right here. We gonna give them what they came for. We gonna take it up from last year. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Yeah.
Welcome to Selkirk TV. I'm your host, Paul Olson. The show is the future of pickleball. We deal with the people that are making the sport go, making it grow, making it expand. Today, I've got a very, very interesting guest that has some pretty amazing insights into the sport of pickleball. Todd Boss, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here.
Good. I want to give you guys a little bit of a background. Todd has a very interesting position in pickleball. He is the writer for Forbes and the Forbes media business, and he also does the Sports Money blog. We're going to come back to that in a minute. I want to start off by giving the world a little bit of an idea of how Todd came into my vision. He did an article. The first one was The Year in Review in Pickleball. First time I had seen somebody really accurately chronicle what I had been living and seeing in my involvement in the sport. Now there's a year in review two of pickleball. Take an opportunity to go back and look at Forbes.com. You'll see who Todd is and what he does. But I want to get a little bit of an idea, Todd. How did you get into the Forbes pickleball space?
So it's an interesting story, I think. Well, maybe not that interesting when I go through it. I come from racquetball, the racquetball industry, and from doing a lot of stuff in racquetball. For the last 20 years, 25 years, I have maintained and developed a site called ProRacquetballStats.com. It is a match history database and for the pro tours, for the amateurs, for all things racquetball. And I began to, as I would publish tournament after tournament, I began to just essentially do a release and say to the racquetball community and say, hey, I have loaded up, you know, the last men's pro tour from Cincinnati, or I have loaded up the 2024 USA Nationals. And as I started to load these up, I would give a little bit of a recap. And so I started to, like, literally, you know, in a sports journalistic sense, I started to write a recap of the event and kind of highlight what I thought were the interesting matches, if there were upsets, talk a little bit about the history of that particular event, blah, blah, blah. So for years, and you can find that content, you know, in Facebook groups or on the blog that I do for that. And so for many years, I have been doing essentially racquetball-based sports journalism. That led to a lot of involvement with the pro tours. That led to my eventually being on the USA Board of Directors for racquetball. And it led to me writing, especially for a site called Quora, which if you don't know what that is, Quora is kind of like, it's supposed to be a site where experts on a field can go in and answer questions that people in the industry have or people in general on the internet have. And so I got to start, I started to write answers to stuff about related to racquetball. So one thing led to another, and in, I believe in 2019, I started playing pickleball. You know, we found it in the local Y. They were doing rec play on Saturday mornings, and I dropped my kid off, and I was like, you know, I can play this. So I got a paddle, started to play. And as I started to get more and more into pickleball, I found myself already on the Quora site answering questions that were starting to pop up about pickleball. You know, and it's the same kind of things you would expect that you see in Facebook groups all the time. It's, you know, tell me about, you know, what is, how do I find players or communities, or, you know, is my serve legal, or what's the rule here? You know, the same kind of stuff you see in the main Facebook groups or on Reddit or in the other places where we discuss pickleball. So one day in early January 2023, out of the blue on Quora, I got an email from an editor at Forbes, and she had read some of my content, read some of my racquetball content, read some of the answers that I was providing about pickleball. And she's like, hey, Forbes. So Forbes.com, of course, everyone knows that's the business magazine. But Forbes itself has this sports money blog, which is designed to be as it sounds, you know, the business of sports. And so if you go to that particular blog, they have contributing writers all over the world talking about just every sport you can think about imaginable. And she was looking, you know, because pickleball was starting to blow up, she was looking for a pickleball writer. So I pitched her some ideas, pitched her some story content, sent her some of the content of the traditional sports journalism that I had been writing, you know, in racquetball, and voila, I had the gig.
So cool. So now when you talk about you had the gig, one of the things that I know a bit about the media world, do you get assignments from an editor, or are you creating content, submitting it, and then they review what they want to pick up? How does that work for you?
So it's a combination. I do have an editor, and my editor will make suggestions. So when big events come up, and there's only been a few in the pickleball world, but for example, when the first McEnroe Roddick, when the first Pickle Slam event occurred, my editors reached out because that had gotten enough play in major mainstream media that she wanted me to write about it. But there's been a couple other situations like that too, and it's kind of the things that us in the pickleball industry know have gotten enough kind of awareness of. But for the most part, I am doing, you know, pro event coverage. So anytime that there's a PPA, MLP, APP, US Open, or a Nationals event, I cover it and do a recap of it. And so that generates enough content that's almost, we're basically to the point where there's some type of pro level event every weekend. And then on top of that, I'll go through a series of stories, some of which I initially pitched, but which are, you know, which transcend the sport. So some of those that I've written about are, you know, the influx of indoor facilities, or like a deep dive into the rule changes that occur at the beginning of each year. If there's something kind of inside sports or inside, you know, behind the scenes related to the tour wars, I generally try to cover those. And so that's how, so the ideas just kind of are essentially ideas that I've come up with.
But you use a really critical word, and that's deep dive. And one of the things that really has impressed me with what you do and how you do it is the degree of depth that you get in the articles that you do. There's been an awful lot of complexity, certainly over the last 3 years. It's just been off the Richter scale. And I have been really amazed at how well you're able to actually capture the moment. We're going to get into some questions that I have specific to that as a result of that. But one of the other things about you that's a little bit unique is you are a professional database specialist. Tell us a little bit about what you do in the database mm-hmm. world and how that's factored into what you do, and then ultimately for the APP.
Sure. So yeah, so as my real job, I should clarify, because this question comes up a lot. I am not a full-time employee of Forbes. I'm a contributing writer, which means that I'm writing these articles essentially in my spare time, nights and weekends, shall we say. For my real job, my full-time job, I am a professional database consultant. I work, I generally work as a consultant to large organizations that have large amounts of data that they need to store, query through, report on, cleanse, that kind of thing. A lot of federal work, a lot of major big time commercial work. My current clients include a federal customer, a telecom customer, and a fintech customer based out of Boston. So how does this translate, though? There is kind of an interesting story. I'm going to go back to the racquetball world. So when I built the racquetball database of matches that I talked about, it's at its core, it's a match database. You know, hey, who won? You know, John Doe beat, you know, James Smith, you know, by this score on this date, on this tour, in this city, and a source. So that table, and there's tens of thousands of records in that database. Well, it's one thing to have all the data in a table. It's another thing to build the reporting platform to allow you to sift through that data and be able to report on it. And so that's what I did for racquetball. So there's a site, and it kicks off a series of reports, and there's 150 reports that you can wash through now that give you everything from a list of all the matches in a particular event, or a list of all the finals in a season, or at a player basis, you can get career one loss or career head-to-heads, or a player's best result based on their seeding and their results in a particular tournament, blah, blah, blah. So my career and my skills, or the skills that I've acquired as a database professional, allowed me to kind of build that solution. So that's been out there running, I believe, 22, 23 years. And so interestingly, a few years back, and right around the time, a little bit before I started working with Forbes, I got a call from a colleague of mine from the racquetball industry, a fellow by the name of Jonathan Clay, who runs an apparel company out of the New York, New Jersey area. And he had been working with the APP. He'd been working with Ken Herman, the APP. And he told me, he's like, hey, Ken is looking for someone to do rankings for his tour. And Clay thought of me naturally because of the data that I'd done and the work that I've done in racquetball all these years. So we set up a meeting. I talked to Ken, and what Ken needed was he essentially needed a ranking system for his professionals. So if say Chris Hayworth wins a singles event, you know, they're playing in Chicago this weekend, and Hayworth will be the one seed. If he wins that tournament, he will get a certain number of ranking points, 200, 400, 600. And over the course of a 365 rolling day calendar, that's how the APP and the PPA works the same way. The PPA has a rolling 365 day calendar of rankings for its players, you know, different from a rating. You know, if I say that I'm a 4.6 duper rated player, that's a rating. That's not a ranking on a pro tour. And so I eventually came to an agreement with Ken to write the program, and it's a Python based program that takes in a formatted list of results for each APP event, kind of washes through them, and for each player and each division that they play, figure out how many ranking points they earn based on their placement, you know, first, second, third, fourth, whatever, or the number of wins that they had in the event. Because they get you get points per win, and you also get points per placement, like if you finished first, second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever. That program runs at the end of each APP event. I generate a bunch of reports, send them to their website developers, and then voila, if you go to APP's website, you will see the output of that work in terms is represented as the rankings for the Pro Tour.
I want to tell you guys about one of the best additions I've got to my game. And it's not another paddle. It's not another shirt. It's my Selkirk Tour Bag. Selkirk bags are designed with tremendous intent. They're to help you organize, to keep things that you need with you where you can get at them whenever you want them. The beauty of the Selkirk bags is they're designed by a company that really thinks first, last, and always about pickleball. They've created a series of bags at all kinds of price points that are tremendously well designed, and frankly, they look really good. Look at the Selkirk bags, not only for what you do courtside. I use my tour bag as my travel bag when I'm going around the country. Selkirk will help you have the best experience you can have. Enjoy it. Thanks so much. You can find all the bags on Selkirk.com's website. So now then, where you're doing the rankings, one of the things that's been sort of interesting, we just had a pretty big announcement in the last couple of weeks prior to this interview where the Pickleball World Tour and Pickleball World rankings were announced, where they're talking about a global tracking system. Will ranking systems like you do for APP and like PPA, MLP, will they be able to overlap with the new global scene? How will that work, or will it work or not?
You know, it goes back to the definition of ranking versus rating, right? If the global group is doing a rating, you know, kind of similar to UTRP or the Duper, that is completely different than the ranking on a tour. I don't honestly know exactly how they're going to set up their events, but if they want to work anything like what the best example to compare it to is the tennis is what tennis does. So you have the ATP or the WTA, you know, controlling men or women, and it's a global tour, and so no matter where these players play all around the world, there's a defined set of points that they earn in each event. If they play a Grand Slam, they get a certain number of points if they win it. If they play in a 1,000 level series, they'll get 1,000 points for winning it. A 500 level, they get 500 for winning it. Essentially, the ATP 250, 500,000 series is literally driven by the number of points that you get for winning it, not driven by the money or, you know, who necessarily is running it. So if I go back and I'm the global group and the global people want to do some type of cross-tour ranking system wherein if I win a PPA event, I get a certain number of points. If I win an APP event, I get a certain number of points. If I win the, you know, the Monsoon 2.0 event that just occurred in India, which is not sanctioned by either pro event, but which is clearly, you know, a significant pro event that was getting money, they could come up conceivably with a system that leverages the existing ranking points of all these places and tries to come up with a way to do a global ranking across all of these events.
Yeah, that is, it's going to be sort of interesting. I had a very interesting opportunity to interview Pran Kohli, who is the head of the Pickleball World Ranking, and it is a ranking system, and the Pickleball World Tour. And he really had some interesting thoughts on how he thought this thing was going to go as it expands globally. I want to take a quick second and tell you, if you're watching this and you're enjoying what you're seeing, take the opportunity to hit the like button, subscribe to this show, and hit the notification tag. You'll hear about these shows the minute they're released and get an opportunity to see them directly. You know, Todd, I want to jump into something on the technology side of things, because it's really been, you've been really involved in technology, what you're doing with the database stuff. Guide us a little bit as to see how you see technology affecting pickleball.
So there's several channels or different paths that I think technology is going to start to play a bigger part in pickleball. So let's just start at the high level. Let's just talk about match stats, like who won something and who won something and trends and things like that. Right now, there's not a really great availability of just pure match stats. So when I write, I see that somebody made the semis as the number 28 seed, I want to know, well, is that out of character for them? You know, what was the last time that that person got to that level? And there's really not a cross tour availability of data to allow you to even have that very high rudimentary level of analysis on player results. So, and the reason for this is kind of obvious. You know, for those of us that know the industry, you know, there are competing factions that are kind of, you know, the privately owned organizations, and they don't share data necessarily. In fact, right now we're seeing kind of a divergence of people using the same platforms to even run their events. It used to be that all the pro events, well, not even all of the major tours used pickleball brackets. Now, you know, the APP and the USA and USAP are going to start using UTR Sports as a sport platform. Meanwhile, PPA will continue to use the pickleball brackets platform because the same group owns both entities. And then MLP doesn't use either. MLP essentially uses a spreadsheet that they put online with some custom programming. So, and there's other entities out there. There's other tour. I've heard that the US Open is going to use even a third platform when they eventually run their next event in 2025. I think they're going to use something called Pickleball Den because the people that bought US Open own that platform. And so now we're talking about five pro entities that basically use four different platforms to store their data, which is bad for those of us that have a goal of wanting to see all the data in one place. That was kind of a long runabout answer for just one of the places, but more specific to what you're talking about, I think that there's huge value in intra-match statistic analysis. So that what I'm talking about there is the ability to take a match and track at a detailed basis all of the details of the individual shots. So, hey, I serve and I serve to your backhand, and then you hit a backhand back to my partner, the third shot's a drive or the third shot's a drop, you know, and then someone tries to attack and then there's a reset. And then eventually I get to a dink battle at the net between two partners. And so how many shots go across or how many go to the middle or how many go straight to the person in front of me? You know, what is the average height of that ball? Where's that ball landing? How many times is this dink person like basically hitting a dead dink and popping it up so that somebody can whack it? You know, all of these are incredibly valuable stats, especially as a player. And I've only seen a couple shops that really kind of do it to a decent factor because what I have, if I have everything that I just described, then at the end of a match, which involves hundreds of strokes, right? Let alone, you know, hundreds of points back and forth in a long match that's not rally scoring, but also hundreds and hundreds of strokes. Well, I want to know, you know, what's my drive percentage on my forehand? What's my drive percentage on my backhand? What's my dink percentage for my forehand? What's my dink percentage for my backhand? If I find out, for example, because I'll take myself as an example. I like to play a power game. You know, I like to hit drives on the third. Well, if I'm netting or if I'm hitting the back, you know, if I'm making errors on 20% of my drives, but I'm only making errors on 5% of my dinks as a third shot drop, well, maybe I'm playing the wrong way, right? And I would never have that insight unless I sat there and had some these kind of statistics available to me. I think there's an opportunity there. I've seen people do what I just described, but it's very manual. And it's basically somebody sitting there kind of cataloging each shot. And I don't think that it could be, I feel like a sport like tennis has this at a much better basis because you have, for example, they have engaged IBM that has done some multi-million dollar investment into shot tracking or shot tracing for, you know, that you see all the time. And they can get you that kind of data. Other technology kind of channels that are going to be important or that are important to the influx of our sport are going to be line challenges or line calling. You know, there's a lot of complaints in the pro game, especially about line calls. And, you know, we don't have Hawkeye in pickleball. Why? Because we don't have permanent courts. It's not like we have a U.S. Open stadium that's just sitting there waiting for the next, you know, U.S. Open to show up, where all the Hawkeye cameras have been installed for a decade and are perfectly ready to go. The PPA, the APP, these guys, they're basically like traveling circuses. They play in Cincinnati one week, and then they literally drive on a Monday night to go to Las Vegas and set up their courts, and now they're playing in Las Vegas. It's really difficult to have excellent tech at all, whether it's line calling or even the video or the other kind of technology that these tours need, or that customers like me would expect when you're moving around like in the way that they are, or when they're especially when they're playing on essentially temporary courts, the amount that they are. There's a couple other there's a couple of areas of tech that I think are important that maybe people don't realize as much. As we start to use indoor courts or, you know, kind of rental or not rental, but facilities where you have to be a member to be a play, whether it's indoor, whether it's outdoor, you know, the tech that drives and manages those courts is important. There's a couple of leading technology companies in place that make apps that integrate with the technology on the screens, that integrate with like the point of sale system or the membership or the court reservation system. All this stuff needs to flow together just to have a great user experience as a paying customer of an indoor facility, right? The tech and the integration behind what I just described is a challenge, and it's complicated enough that only a couple companies are even in the space. So that's a quick overview of what tech in pickleball from what I see.
You know, you're describing some things that are really exciting, and to imagine really as our sport grows and matures coming into that, would it be possible where we do have a number of indoor facilities that are fixed, that are effectively the equivalent of what the ATP you're describing does, would it be possible to do a case study and set one of these up and actually have it really deliver sort of the optimal amount of information that you're describing? I think players would find it amazing if they could actually get a real analysis of what their game was and its strengths and weaknesses.
I feel like we're getting closer to that point. You know, they're... For the first couple of years of all the pro tours, they were going to a site that had maybe they had some dedicated pickleball courts, but for the most part, they were repaving or repainting tennis courts, putting on semi-permanent nets and playing there, and then leaving and painting it back to be a tennis court. Now we're starting to see a lot more facilities, like for example, the 50 some odd courts that are in Mesa or the location in Naples that the U.S. Open uses, where those courts are there, they're permanent courts, and they're going to stay there. So the best goal would be to, especially if you wanted to test for real Hawkeye technology or Hawkeye-like technology or swing, you know, or swing vision or whatever technology you want to use there, or a higher-end line call, or even just higher frame per second cameras that are looking at the lines. Like right now, the biggest challenge is, we see it when we watch a pro event. The play, you know, we see a call that's close, and the guy goes, "Oh, I want to challenge it." And then they're replaying the same video feed that the referees see, and it's so grainy and it's so few frames per second that the ball goes from here to here to here, and you're like, "Well, I don't know where it bounced." But if I had a higher frame per second camera available and fixed on that line, whether it's the baseline or the sideline, then I can play it and I get more frames per second. I can see exactly where that ball bounces and then I can make a better call. I think we're getting closer to that point. And I think it's just a matter of time before someone does the investment to make it happen, or takes an existing system and does the adaptation to make it work for people.
Well, I think it's great to have somebody like you describe how these things could work and how they should work, because I think we've got enough eyes coming on the sport and we have enough people that want to find a way to invest and participate in the growth of pickleball. I'm guessing somebody's going to come out of the woodwork and want to jump on this. I want to just take a quick second, Todd, before we go on and remind folks, you're watching this is on the Selkirk TV channel. If you're watching this on YouTube, thank you very much for participating. I asked, hit the like and subscribe button. But if you want to really see what goes on internally at Selkirk TV, get the app. The app is the most aggregated, organized group of podcasters, coaches, teachers, and there's even live broadcasts of major pro events right on your phone. Selkirk TV app is available on all the platforms. Get it. Believe me, you'll love it. I want to say something now, Todd, about what you're doing. You're one of the most serious journalists and analysts of pickleball that I've seen. You work closely with the APP. How do you see the future evolving between all these divergent interests and all of the private for-profit enterprises? Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel for getting this thing organized?
If you're talking about like the shakeout of professional pickleball, I do not see light at the end of the tunnel as of yet. What I see are several groups. Now, we've seen some consolidation, right? The PPA and the APP had their well-publicized battle last August, but they eventually came underneath one umbrella. And ostensibly, one group owns both of those tours, and ostensibly, they're trying to make both be successful. You know, the APP is cruising along. They are profitable. They are self-sustaining. They have sponsors. They have TV. They're not going anywhere, because nothing has compelled them necessarily to go anywhere. Now, interestingly, just yesterday on Jimmy and Tyler's podcast, King of the Court, they had on Connor, and Connor mentioned that Connor Pardo, the CEO of PPA, Connor mentioned that they're planning on kicking off a challenger series underneath the umbrella of PPA in 2025. Well, that is probably yet another direct shot at what the APP is doing, because what we've now seen is kind of occurring is some players are coming up, and the APP is kind of an easier lift. The qualifying draws aren't as big. Players can start there and get some success there and then eventually try to get themselves a contract or get, they also have the freedom to go play on the PPA, and they can try to get, eventually try to work their way into a contract on the PPA. You know, all of this is leaving aside what this brand new entity, the Global Pickleball Federation, which sounds like it is going to try to do a pro tour, but on a more global scale. And they have outside investors, just like the PPA had initially some outside investors. And the MLP has outside investors. So it'll be interesting to see, especially considering the fact that, you can make a pretty cogent argument that, 90 of the top 100 players are currently under contract to the UPA. But it sounds to me like there's going to be some pretty significant money tournaments held outside of the PPA, right? And so suddenly you're going to have these big prize money tournaments available to those that have stayed non-exclusive, or are APP players. And I think you're going to run into a case where these PPA players who have signed exclusivity contracts that says they cannot compete without permission outside of these events are going to look at these dollar figures and be like, okay, yes, I'm on salary, but I could be making more, or I want to have the ability to compete for these other prize monies. And that's not necessarily because of the GPF. We know that there's events going on in Australia and in England and around, other places in Europe. As I mentioned earlier, they just had the second version of the Monsoon tournament in India, which is a decent prize money event. At some point, you're going to see like major money flowing into these other events, especially if there's sponsors and or attention that warrants it. And that's just going to be more opportunity for there to be additional competition. I think the big kind of point at which, to answer your specific question, we're going to really see kind of an inflection point, is going to be a couple of years from now when all of these three-year contracts that all these people have signed is done. So going back to last August, tour wars, people sign exclusivity contracts to either PPA or APP. Eventually, they all become under the UPA. All those contracts were essentially changed, as I understand it. They were all changed to essentially have the same begin and end dates, which was smart, because the last thing you want is for 90% of your contracts to end and then still have a couple of stragglers, right? So when those contracts end, what's going to happen? I'm super curious. Are we going to roll into a new set of exclusivity contracts? Are the pro tours at that point going to just be like, okay, this whole guaranteed money thing is for the birds? We're going to go back to kind of a eat what you kill structure, which is essentially what APP, or I'm sorry, what, yeah, it is what the APP does. It also is what the professional tennis tours have done for decades. You can enter a tournament, lose in the first round, you get nothing. Or you can enter a tournament and you get a decent guaranteed money for just even qualifying. You can still have, you know, appearance fees guaranteed for certain top players, you know, which could serve as kind of like your contract or your salary. But I just have to think that the salaries that these players are being paid right now are not commensurate with the amount of money that they would be earning if we just had no contracts and it was just all 100% prize money based events on the PPA.
Yeah, I think you're striking on a chord that has been really very much in my thinking. From the time the pro tours started signing players, and then I found out that they don't actually get all their prize money, that some of that goes back to support the salaries that they get, it just doesn't feel like the competition level that I see in other sports. And I came from a tennis background, and the idea of, like you say, you eat what you kill. And if you're not winning, you're not making money. If you are winning and you're winning a lot, you're making a lot of money. And I think that that's got to come back to the sport of pickleball at the pro level, particularly as we're seeing global interest showing the idea of really creating the same sort of Grand Slam events that we have in tennis or in World Cup soccer or in any of these events. It is a global space, and we've got to figure out a way to have the world participate in this game of pickleball. So I really think it could be a very positive thing as worldwide interests come into the game of pickleball. Well, Todd, I want to tell you, it has really been enjoyable having you on the show. I want to say thank you. You are an amazingly informed guy. I actually met Todd at a conference in Princeton, New Jersey back in May, and I believe I'm probably going to see Todd again in Dubai in the Middle East in January. Watch Todd Boss. Look up Forbes.com and find Todd's information. He is amazing. Thank you very much for joining me today, Todd.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thanks for the kind words. And I'm super happy you invited me to come on to Selkirk TV to talk pickleball.